Hello, and welcome to the Scottcast. This is the Jibom Guild Wars 2 Community's off-topic podcast, where we talk about games, books, and what else we've been doing. Joining me today is, after a long time away, Mr. Squiddle. How are you doing, sir?
I'm good. I was thinking about beer.
Okay, yep.
And I'm looking at the glass and little bubbles coming up, and I'm wondering, is beer anti-gravity?
Please don't make me explain liquid dynamics to you.
Because they're going up, so I figure if I can put myself in a vat of beer,
okay,
I can actually float up. And if we get the barrel to fly up, maybe I can float higher than in the water of the yeast and the beer going upward.
What if Willy Wonka's fizzy lifting drink was like some non-alcoholic beer?
I'd be okay with that.
I'm just wondering how many beers he's had already today.
Hey, you know what? It's Friday the 13th on the day of this recording.
Holy shit, it is.
It can be spooky, you know? I intended to play Amnesia Machine for Pigs tonight, not connecting that it was Friday the 13th. Like, it wasn't until today. It's like, oh crap, I planned on doing that. It's going to suck.
That is Thurbleton also joining us as the man in the last seat, who's been absent for a couple weeks as well. Though he really hasn't been doing anything in the time between Noobarama also joining us.
Sorry, there's a cinematic. One sec.
He's been living life. check out cinematics.
Oh, wait, no, it's a menu cinematic. Never mind. You can keep going.
Oh, God. I thought we agreed for you to not play Medal
not
of Honor
you
Airborne.
I'm fucking playing Medal of Honor. Shit.
Why are you playing Medal of Honor?
Because I just bought it.
We also agreed that I wouldn't be drinking soda or opening cans during the show either, but, you know.
<it's happened. laughs> That's what happens.
It's the Scotchcast. We're all hell.
When you try to put your fucking beliefs on other people, and you don't let them express themselves. That's what happens.
Oh God, this show is off. All right, bring you back.
It's never on tracks.
I know. It's the off-topic show. Oh God, I have a book to talk about. I just remembered.
We are on the mag rail invented by Brad Shoemaker, flying high. Heavy lifting, fizzy beer drinks.
Oh man, Vinco.
Let's get this show started.
Do you guys see that Vinco t-shirt? I don't know. It might be too inside joke for me to wear a t-shirt with Vinco on it. I don't know.
No.
Maybe.
I don't know. Anyway, so on this episode, we'll be talking about games we've been playing. I think two of us have been playing games and the other two of us have been having like real life stuff to do, so it might not be too long. And follow that up with maybe some technology news. Vita TV, new iPhones, and my speculation as to why I'm excited about the new iPhones. But with that, I think we should start with Noobarama, because he's got the least interesting stuff.
What the fuck are you talking about, you dick? All right, good night.
Maybe a large... We don't know the demographic of the people who listen to this podcast, and who also like... Guild Wars players might also like... Flight simulators.
I don't play flight simulator. When have I ever played a flight simulator? Whenever I ever talked about a flight simulator, that's you, Thurb, not me. Don't fucking fly. I'm scared.
You're just playing one.
Noob, it's okay. You're like the guilty pleasure that I keep in my pocket because I don't want anyone to know that I lust after you.
Exactly.
You're just playing Medal of Honor Airborne.
Yeah, but I'm not. Yeah, but you're. I'm not flying planes. I'm jumping out of planes.
What have you been playing, sir? Still it.
Nothing.
Oh, all right.
No.
Have you been experiencing anything?
I've been playing EU4, which, of course, game of the year 2014.
So
we
agreed before the show that I would give you an opportunity to talk about EU4.
No, you know what? I feel like this is just a way for you guys to just shoot the game. And I'm not.
I don't know what it is. And I even asked before we started this, you know, what is that weird name that I can never repronounce? When I hear it. So tell me about it. I want to know.
It's like a Europe universe. You know what I'm saying? EU4, Europe Universalis.
So there's a lot of bobbies around and people with mallets and no
it's just
guns.
Just a pile of bodies in a well. That's
so here's
the thing,
Noob. I'm kind of interested because you've had an opportunity to play it more. For anyone out there who actually does give a shit about Europa Universalis and other grand strategy games, how does this compare to the other grand strategy games you've played? Is it actually better than the previous Europas?
Okay, this is... I think a lot of my friends who've never played grand strategy games before, other than maybe, like, the strategy map on a Total War game have gotten EU4, and it's been a lot easier for them to try out. It's a lot more accessible. And the problem is, especially with like hardcore titles like Europa Universalis, you know, when you streamline it and you make it like more accessible, people tend to hate it. Like your fan base tend to hate it. They're like, oh, you made this casual, I don't want to play this anymore. But this game somehow continues to be exactly same in terms of like the difficulty level. It just streamlines information rather than game mechanics. Okay. And I think that's very well done, but it's like visually a lot better. Gameplay wise, it's essentially the same game, except information is harder to find. It's a lot more playable. The multiplayer isn't broken, because in the old game, every time you play a multiplayer game, your checksum changes, so you have to restart your client if you want to join a different multiplayer game. That's essentially fucked up.
That's weird.
They fix that. Steam works, so you can play with your friends on Steam. And you can conquer the world as a country in the world in the time
period. So is this the best grand strategy game out there now?
Grand strategy, yes. I would argue grand strategy, the genre, not necessarily fighting, but managing all sorts of different things from economy to politics, diplomacy. This is essentially what you want to get if you're interested in grand strategy or strategy games in general. I recommend people who have never played grand strategy, who have thought of, you know, trying it out, to definitely try it out, because it's only like $40 for a AAA title, essentially. In fact, I would argue it's quadruple A, and it's a great deal. It is a great deal.
Sure, but you could also probably trade it with us now with the new Steam sharing.
Ooh, actually, yeah, we should talk about that at the end of the show. Oh. We will definitely talk about that at the end of the show.
I have complaints.
Indeed.
I don't like sharing my game.
But
the other thing should I talk about my other thing?
Well, I have one question in regards to Europa Universalis, which is, again, it's really hard to pronounce.
Universalis, you idiot. It's Europa.
I have a cold.
Okay.
It's a Paradox joint, and I remember they talked about, like, we spoke on previous podcasts about them having the ability to have saves cross-game.
Yes.
Is this one of those games?
Yeah. So Crusader Kings 2, if any of you have played it, I like to call it Casual Kings 2. Essentially, you have a save game converter. So if it essentially converts your game from that ends in like 1100 or something a little bit later, I don't know, to the starting date of 1453, 58. But the cool thing about it is it isn't just like a save port, but there's exclusive content you get by transferring over. For example, there's certain countries that you can only play in Crusader Kings 2 that can be, transferred over to Europa Universalis 4. And these countries have their own special national ideas, their own bonuses. And it's very good. And it sort of incentivizes people to, I don't know, buy the game. Also, like, a cool thing is there's this weird ahistorical expansion in Crusader Kings 2 where the Aztecs invade Europe called Sunset Invasion. Mm-hmm. And essentially, you can carry that over and you can have a crazy Aztec Europe if you're.
The Aztecs invade Europe?
Yes. It's, like, they started doing like weird non historic.
Then the really cool release trailer, which was like this grand, like, sweeping speech, and it ends of like, they will fear the Empire of Sweden. And I was like, okay, I can see why people like this game now.
Yeah, and I don't think it's as much like providing exclusive content. It's for people who get enriched and like really delve into, get like immerse themselves in the game of Casual Kings or like whichever game, like,
it's can't just, really immerse yourself in Casual Kings. Just,
is it just these two games that has the link?
Yes, this is the first time it's been made in terms of, like, the developers have made it themselves.
Right.
For Europa Universalis 3, Victoria 2, Hearts of Iron 3, they exist as community-made things, and I hope in future games that come from them, they do more of this stuff, just so, you know, it's like, there's a reason to buy more of them and try them out.
Yeah, cool. That's like, it's super cool. But yeah, I just think it's to continue, like, to make them feel like the story is continuing across game. Exactly. I don't know if that's multiple ways you can spin that.
I guess if you're playing, the problem with that is if you're just playing on an easier difficulty, you tend to just have a super country that rules the world. Like, one of the, for example, achievements in the game is to rule the world as, like, I don't know, Montenegro or something, some really tiny one state minor.
Right.
And it's sort of that thing. But once you get to a certain point in a difficulty, like at higher difficulties, I'd assume it balances out and your empire falls apart due to religious revolts and stuff like that. And
right.
You sort of have to give away power. But at an easier difficulty, I'm sure it does get quite boring. So
sure.
That's the warning, I guess. But generally, like, it's hard to rule the world in Crusader Kings, and it sort of balances out, I would assume. So, I don't know. I haven't actually tried it out myself, because I can't get myself to play that other game.
Oh, God, Nubarama just dropped at that one moment where we needed him. Oh, well, that's fine. He was talking about Europa Universalis. Moving on! We'll let him talk more when he, or if he comes back. Darbleton. Actually, wait. So... you have to talk about PAX. Yeah, sure. Let's do that. Let's do you, then Squids, then me.
And he says, yes, I'll buy in. it's the last thing. So, PAX happened. PAX Prime, I had a lot of fun with it. It was only one day, so I couldn't really see any of the big games because,
right.
Like, people that had gone on all the previous days. It was the first time they'd done 4 days.
Right.
And they were all just like, oh, well, it's my last day. I'm just going to wait in all these huge lines and do stuff. And so as much as I wanted to play stuff like Transistor or Titanfall and like check out any of the new consoles, mm-hmm. any of that stuff.
Yep.
I couldn't really do that because I only had like 6 hours to see everything and do all the panels I wanted to do. And you have to like wager queue time ahead of time.
Right. So how does that... how did you manage your time? Where did you put your time towards for your one
basically
day
I hit up as much indie stuff and looked for people, looked for developers and whatnot. So like I did get to go to the Supergiant booth,
right?
But rather than like going to the game, I just, Greg Kasavin was standing around and I just walked up to him and just said, like, just started talking to him initially about Dota 2. He seemed, all everyone I talked to behind like a booth just looked the most haggard of all time. Like, this fourth day is just wearing them thin.
Man. So you actually got a ticket to the fourth day of PAX, to the last day of PAX.
Yeah. That was the only one I could get a ticket for.
That's fair. And like, everyone would be dead.
On sale insane fast.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. Right, so who all did you get to meet then? If you spend your time in the mega booth, etc. Like, I assume you went to the mega booth.
I did go to the mega booth. I did get a chance to speak to Tom Francis, who I'm a big fan of his game and his work. The fact that he made a really awesome, inspiring game just by himself with
so he's
very
the Gunpoint guy, right?
Game, yes, he created Gunpoint, and I got to talk to him, and I guess we could transition to this a little bit. I've been playing around with Game Maker. It's the program that Gunpoint was made in, as well as Spelunky,
right?
Was initially made in Game Maker and a ton of other games.
I actually didn't know Spelunky was Game Maker. I thought it was a Unity joint.
No, I think like the newest version might be Unity, but it initially started as a game maker thing. And I think the creator has either done some tutorials or he's paid it forward, so to speak,
right.
with Game Maker to sort of help prop that up some. As of right now, just a couple tutorials done. It seems like a really cool thing. And I think if Durin and I play around with it a lot more, we can give a bit more a review about it.
Wait, so what is Game Maker from like a start point? Where do you start and like how do you, what are the tutorials? Like how does it warm you into it?
Typically where most games start with, like if you want to make it like Unity even, you have to start with code
right.
Usually. With Game Maker, you can start making like models and start just like building a map, so to speak, and then make like, so you put all the artwork in or whatnot and then start doing the programming second.
Okay,
which it's a bit more approachable for new people,
right?
And yeah, it's a lot easier to start like playing around with the game
and
and then start fine tuning.
Does it lend itself to 2D experiences? Because thinking about both,
it is
Spelunky
entirely 2D, I believe.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so Gunpoint and Spelunky share that, and that they're side scrolling or top down scrolling 2D, very like cartoony art style, and there's like. Because if it focuses on 2D, then you don't have to worry about so much about things like collision and things like that. Like, you have very simplistic boxes to work with.
Well, I mean, yes and no. There is a basic collision engine in the game, but Tom Francis said he had to rewrite from scratch his collision engine 7 times. And the last time, he never actually got it correct, like fully correct.
Right.
He had to, it was just like, it was good enough. There's a couple bugs in there, but it's fine.
Right.
I don't really want to rewrite this another time. So that is a...
All right.
Hello. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
No problem. We're just going over packs and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, not going too far into it. A lot of fun, and I hope to learn more about it. They have a lot of tutorials.
Right.
There's a free version that just, like, limits it. You get all the options you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you can't really – it doesn't let you port it to any systems with a free version. It costs, like, maybe $100 total, which – yeah. It's not too bad.
Do you find it easy to use? Like, what have you been able to do with it so far?
I've just been, like, messing around with tutorials.
And what do those involve, essentially? Are they just, like, how to make a character, or...
No, it's actually like, hey, we're going to make this very basic game.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
And are they in-depth? Are they, like, video tutorials, or is it all, like, written tutorials?
It's written tutorials, and, yeah.
All right, so we'll expect more from you there. I assume this is all in your... calculated endpoint in making a rock climbing game. Is that how this is going to go down, Thurbleton?
Making many games, one of which, chief of which, is a rock
climbing game. Cool.
I just don't like how the game industry has rock climbing games right now. It's not rock climbing games, but rock climbing like scenarios. In like Tomb Raider, for example, you just go up.
Yeah. It's very simplistic.
Oh, I need to play Tomb Raider.
So you're saying with the new console,
do I need to play Tomb Raider?
You actually move your fingers and grab the rocks and see the finger movements.
Yeah, and then you can throw your friend down with the Kinect. Yeah,
yeah, it works.
I'm kind of curious how bad that game's going to be.
Oh man!
But yeah, I got to talk to a lot of people. Got to see a lot of weird stuff at the Indie Mega booths. Like it was spread out and crazy, and I kind of like they need to be in a bigger hall only just to fit all like those people,
right?
Because it's craziness.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you questions. So, top moment of PAX for you?
Probably speaking of Tom Francis this year.
Okay.
I'd like to say, like, you know, playing Titanfall or something, but I didn't really want to wait in line for 2 hours when I only had 6 hours.
Right.
Second was probably, like, what I did is, anybody doesn't know, there's a game called Cards Against Humanity. It's a lot of fun. You should look into it.
Yep.
There's a giant bomb quick look, I think, or at least them playing it for TNT.
Told the bigger blacker box is coming.
Yeah, no, it has arrived. That's was at the at PAX this year.
Nice.
But what I do is I come around with a bunch of blank cards of Cards Against Humanity, and I basically say like, hey, I could either get your autograph or you could make a white card, which is like it's the noun or verb card.
Yeah.
And so I just had the funnest time going around to like I got Greg Kasavin, Greg Rice, Jesse Cox from YouTube, Tyler Wilde from PC Gamer, Tom Francis, of course, Chris Remo of Double Fine, like all these guys who work in the industry who I enjoy their content of. And I get to see their dumb ideas for Cards Against Humanity stuff.
Yeah, like
Greg
for
Rice,
example,
Rice,
just to give him a quick overview, these would be the white cards. So this would be like, it wouldn't be the question card, right? It'd be the noun or verb.
Yeah, it's like the black cards, which are answer a question or fill in a blank, and then the white cards fill in those blanks or answer those questions.
So these could be in the context of blank, that's how I'd like to die. So let's try these out.
Okay.
Let's go.
Okay, so Jesse Cox's elbow deep and whale vagina. That's how I'd want to die. Great.
That works.
Diarrhea, that's how I want to die.
Yep, easy. Are you sure diarrhea is not already a card? I bet that's already
a card. I think it already is a card, but I mean, I can't fault him.
I have some in my head right now that if I were to state it, I'd probably have police officers knocking on my door right now. But
Rick Savin's suggestion of surrounded by scumbags at the end of the world. That's how I want to die.
That's pretty good. Actually, that is pretty excellent.
Tom Francis probably, again, had the best card, and I will probably botch the pronunciation of this, but Defensitration.
Defensitration.
Is that the one that where you throw someone out of the window?
Yes.
Yes.
Which is something you do in Gunpoint all the time. So I had a blast with it. I had one of my friends from out east come over a couple days beforehand. And I got to show them around Portland, and then I got to go to PAX with a friend, so that was nice.
Nice.
While we were in Portland, I guess if we're just going to go into what I've been playing, I got to play there's a well-known arcade in Portland called Ground Control, of which I got to play a game in there called Star Wars by Atari.
I want to pause you there, because there is something I do want to ask about PAX. So everyone I talk to or have heard about on the internet talks about how awesome PAX is. Obviously, there's some issues with the convention center being too small, or the like all the theaters have had to be moved to like hotels and stuff because they just couldn't fit them, and there might be too many people or not.
Well, it's not that. It's in order to expand the expo floor, they need to take the areas where those rooms were, like where the panels were. So the panels got moved to the auxiliary places.
Yeah. So my question to you is, what is the worst things about PAX that you can name? Like, what is like the part where you're like, I am not sure if this is worth it?
Sometimes queuing, cause like you try to make the most of it. Just talk to the fans who you're next to and whatnot.
Right.
But that is kind of a pain.
Mm-hmm. Like queues can go for like 3 hours at PAX, right? Like, this is just stupidly long.
I think 3 hours might be the longest. I think for the most part, it's like, They try to say, no, you guys can't form a line. You have to move until this next panel like goes in. And so it's only like an hour ahead of time.
Right.
Maybe an hour and a half. Again, I wasn't there for like the prime days in which they had the really interesting panel. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it was like an hour and a half for the Omegathon finale at the last. Yeah. Which, I can talk about that. That was crazy.
What is that? What was the Omegathon rally?
Okay, so... and then the other thing is just getting tickets.
What's that?
PAX East has...
Oh, right.
Getting tickets for PAX Prime.
Just getting tickets in general. Yeah.
Yeah, the four-day tickets went on sale and then promptly sold out within 20 minutes.
Yeah. And it's kind of weird because, like, for example, there's the East Coast, West Coast divide in America. And
the East Coast, like, was on sale for months. And then PAX Australia was also on sale for months.
But no, what I meant was, like... When PAX Prime, the tickets sales go live, different parts of America would be in different time zones. And PAX Prime is the one a lot of people want to go to, for example, because Giant Bomb had probably one of their best panels ever at PAX Prime. It's just one point to go there. Some people go to PAX Prime but don't go to PAX East in terms of just exhibitors, etc. So the fact that it opens at a specific point in time, like I can't really think of many ways to mitigate the fact that they have like, just straight up so many people wanting to buy those tickets. Like, because how some concerts do it is they sell half their ticket at one time of day and then half the tickets are like perhaps the next day at a different time or something like that. Like, do you think that something like that could help it? Or is it just...
I don't know. There's no right way to do it. Because this year they didn't announce at all when the tickets were going to go on sale. They just said on Twitter, they're up.
Oh, man. That's one
and
way
so
to do
if
it.
You didn't have Twitter or whatnot, you were kind of screwed like I was.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Cool. So tell us about this Omegathon, and let's move
okay,
on.
Okay, what the Omegathon is there's 20 Omeganauts who are randomly selected from the pre-orders, because no one buys tickets at the gate anymore. but yeah, they're randomly, like, they're selecting, like, hey, you're going to enter the Omegathon. Can you make it? Confirm, yes, no, whatever. When they get in, over the course of the convention, they are whittled down to two finalists through a series of video games.
Okay, right.
And there's, like, maybe like 50 games a total that like they like some of the games leading up to the finals will be. So there's some prep time for that. But the final round, the final match, 1v1, is never announced until the last, like until right before.
Right.
And they've had some awesome stuff, like one of which, who the winner was actually a coworker of mine, was like the Legends of Zelda. A Link to the Past, I want to say, like the first person to get to the first Triforce.
Oh, that's cool. So
that can be like they pick matches that are very good spectator sports. And I think you can watch like videos of all of these.
Right.
And it's just like the idea of speed running Zelda and like when you die or something, it's like, oh, you just got like you have to catch up. You have to hope the next person, like or the person next to you has trouble.
Man,
One of the best ones was the claw game. Like at a pizza joint.
What?
Yeah, they had a giant, like they just had a big claw machine, and
that's great.
That was that. Just, imagine like that. to everyone watching, that is the tensest thing.
Yeah.
And knowing
yeah.
that, like, so, like, it, you get a cash prize and a trip to Japan. So shit is on the line.
Man.
I think it's for TGS, but I don't know too much about it. Just the cash prize. It's right. pretty good.
And I thought Jenga was pretty awesome that they did.
oh, it, man. It Jenga would.
Prime, but, oh, man. That the claw sounds so much more intense than Jenga.
So this year, they played Spy Party.
Oh, wow. Nice. That's a good choice for that. That's pretty cool.
Which, yeah, judging by New Brahma and Squiddle's silence, do you guys, have you heard of Spy Party? Do you know what that is?
Is that a party for spies?
Yes. No, it's...
Everyone hides, and then somebody jumps out and goes, I see you.
No, what it is there's it's a 1v1 match in which a spy has to do a series of objectives, like... plant, like, swap the statues, plant the microfilm, talk to the double agent, a course of things within a time limit. And then the sniper has to identify the spy and stop him.
And he only has one shot, isn't that right? Or
he has, one shot.
Yeah.
And it always takes place at a cocktail party because that's where all the spies are at.
Of course.
And all the other, like, actors, like the NPCs, are all, like, follow a very AI script that the spy has to imitate.
Think of Assassin's Creed multiplayer where you have all these AI like walking around doing their normal thing. So you as the spy have to complete your objectives, but also blend in a way that you kind of look like another AI character. So the other guy can't spot you.
Mm. And so this is sort of like dive kicked the idea of Assassin's Creed in that it's limited just to one-on-one and it's very simplified. Like it's a very streamlined graphic set.
Yeah.
But it went off like gangbusters in just like the crowd. No one in the crowd said anything about like, hey, the spy is the guy in the like red suit or anything.
Oh, good. Good.
And it became super tense. And the final round, to anybody who doesn't know, when you play as the spy, the AI just controls what you're doing until you choose to take control and start taking down the objectives that you have.
Right.
The guy playing as the spy who, if he won that round, he would win the Omegathon and win the cash prize and everything. The person who was like chance of losing on the line was the sniper. So he's got that stress.
Right.
The guy playing as a spy didn't touch his controller. Like he faked it. He faked moving around, but he didn't take control of the spy. So for 2 minutes, like he wasn't doing anything. He wasn't getting any of his objectives. And when it gets down to like 15, 20 seconds, a little like beep, beep,
the sniper is just going to take the shot. He's just going to take the shot.
He took the shot and missed.
Oh, man.
He got the wrong guy. And it was just the biggest like bluff move I've ever seen.
Oh, because that's crazy. Because if the sniper didn't take the shot, he'd win. And so like you essentially threw away thousands of dollars, I think it was, and a trip to Tokyo or Japan in general because you made that bet. So it was like the perfect game of poker right there. He gamed that shit. I'm very impressed. Very impressed. Yeah. Cool. All right. So what have you been playing?
So Atari Star Wars. Guys, listen. It's an arcade game. Super fun.
Is it in a cabinet?
It's cabinet form.
Cabinet form. Okay.
Single player. The controller is... I don't know how to describe it. It's like, imagine a joystick of sorts that like you can turn like a steering wheel left and right.
Right.
But then like, the two handles for each hand, you can pull forward and backward.
Okay.
So you can pull up, you can pull down, you can turn left, and you can turn right.
Right.
That was the controls for the X-Wing.
Was it covered in the tears of many children who have played it?
No, because no one loses at this game. It's the best. All you do is you just destroy the Death Star like over and over again.
Nice.
And like the best 8-bit Star Wars music is playing, and like it gets progressively like there's like towers that happen like that show up and they shoot lasers at you, but they're super easy to dodge because they look like snowflakes.
Nice.
And yeah, it was just. It's the dumbest, funnest game that I wish everyone had a chance to play.
Man, and this is at an arcade, right? Which arcade?
Yeah, it's an arcade. It's Ground Control in Portland, Oregon.
Nice.
And for all you young kids out there, an arcade is a place that has big boxes with TVs in them that play video games.
Keep going. Yeah.
That's about
Wait,
it. That's
unlike
you would put quarters in and yes. you get them back.
Wait, you have to pay for video games?
Yes.
What are you talking about?
And well, even if you win, and even if you win,
can't you?
Even if you win, you still got to put another quarter in to get to the next level.
So, not all the time. No. In terms of like current games I've been playing, getting down to brass tacks.
Right.
Played a little bit more Papers, Please.
Yep.
Just going. I just keep putting in like a couple days at a time in terms of in a game sense, in game mm-hmm. time. Like I'll do like spend 10 minutes, play 2 days.
Yeah.
Game. And it's just I love the weird stuff that is happening in that game. And all I can say is anybody who's interested in it, you can get a free beta like demo of it. That's a lot of fun. If you like it, cold. Sorry. I'm like
you.
The worst stuff is through. I'm recovering. It just doesn't want to quit.
And that was Noob, not Thurbleton. Like the disgusting stuff was all Noob. I hate this sometimes.
That wasn't me.
That was Squids, I think.
Oh, was it?
That's gross. Oh. I have too much manners to do something repulsive like that.
Anyway, for Papers, Please.
I'd be great at bluffing. They always think it's someone else, not me.
Well, I just always just, assume like, it's Noob.
Yeah, just because he's fucking biased and a jerk. That's like, I don't know. That's not allowed. Whatever.
So Papers, Please is still good?
Papers, Please is still good. I'd recommend anybody who's interested in that get like go look up, go to this like the company's website, get the free beta demo, add it to your wish list on Steam. It's probably going to go on sale or soon later, yeah. Or it could end up on the Humble Indie Bundle, which is the number 9 is going on right now.
Yeah, I don't know. The number 9 doesn't seem too impressive.
Yeah, I mean it's got Fast and Light and Fez as rewards. Mark of the Ninja is good 2D stealth game.
Yeah.
Other than that, Brutal Legend is that the Double Fine game?
Yeah, it's a Double Fine game.
Yeah.
I don't think that whatever, game's worth the time.
All right. Trying to, which is a cool three person game. It's a lot of good quality stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's cool.
So I want to hear about Shelter and Receiver Lost. So what else have you been playing?
Gee, don't spoil it. Arma 3 is out, you guys. That's all I'm going to say. Because I talked about it.
Thank you. What?
I
Noob?
Put myself out in the alpha.
Oh, wow. Well,
he's being a hipster.
yeah,
unfortunately,
everyone started playing Arma 3. It's bullshit.
Yeah.
I
unfortunately,
you.
It is like now $60 when if you got it during the alpha, it would have been like 30-something.
So I got to burn myself out for a cheaper price.
Yeah, there you go. But what's neat is they now have Steam Workshop support. So people are making just like these really weird missions that might catch on fire. You never know. Usually on fire. But yeah, that's a neat thing just to mess around with some friends. Another neat thing to mess around with some friends is Guild Wars 2 and the Super Adventure Box.
Yay.
But, yeah. I don't want to go too much into it. This week, check your feeds, folks, because there is a Scotch and a Lincoln cast.
Woo!
So we'll talk about the Super Adventure Box on the other one.
Yes.
And Payday 2 I've also played.
Now, I hear that's a hard game to actually win.
Yes. Sources say that is a hard game. Like, it's you have to ask, how do you win that game? And you have to get really freaking lucky when it comes to the aftermatch, choose your random card and get a random reward thing to outfit yourself.
Right,
because you start with crappy guns and whatnot, and you accrue money through these like heist missions. Anybody doesn't know, Payday 2 is it's the second
Ocean's
Payday.
Four.
Yeah, it's robbing banks, but more shooting than Ocean.
I guess it's that Jeremy Renner movie more than Ocean's anything. What's the name of that
Jeremy Renner movie? What are you talking about?
The one where he's a bank robber.
What?
And they wear masks. Like, what, never what mind.
The Joker.
Joker, no. Yeah, that one.
Yeah,
that's Dark Knight.
That's the name of
it. let me find out.
Robin now. Banks. But yeah, it's a lot of fun with like four friends. I almost wish it wasn't capped at four people, and you could have more and just increase
25
the
people robbing a bank.
Yeah,
that would be.
I mean,
good.
It's effectively it's a
the
horde.
The town that was in the movie.
Oh, that's the Ben Affleck
right?
movie.
Ironically enough, starring the new Batman.
Yeah, the new Batman.
Yeah.
Batman.
Well, Jeremy Renner was.
Swear to me.
So my main thing about Payday 2, though, is Payday 2 completely dead in the water now the GTA 5 Online was announced? Like, is that how this is going to go down? Because that sounds like what this does, but more and better.
I'm going to say no, only because GTA 5, even with online support, is going to be a while before it comes to PC. And Payday 2 seems to be PC-centric.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a point. If I knew more people that played Payday 2, I probably would get into it. I don't think the AI, from what I've seen, is something I actually want to play with. Mm. But the idea that you could have friends on there and, you know, say, like, hey, we're not going to put our masks on right now. We're going to actually scope it out, like really actually scope it out and try to do it as flawlessly as possible. It just feeds that inner something that I want to do. To see if you can, like, 100% it without getting caught.
Yeah, I'd strongly recommend doing it, like, with all of your friends or all the people you're playing with in, like, a Skype call where you're just like, the voice is always on, so you're not having to push buttons and stuff.
Yeah.
I can't comment on the in-game voice, if any, because we never used it. Like, we went straight to Skype.
Cool.
I heard it's a good game for blowing off steam like Hitman, where you can just kill civilians. Is that true?
You get penalized for killing civilians, but don't worry. There is a army of cops in this town that you can slaughter.
Yeah, but they have guns and they shoot back.
No, they just don't really shoot that bad.
But it's like an unending army.
Do they scream
army.
When you shoot them in the knee, the civilians?
You can, if you want to lose all your money.
Yeah, but I don't care.
You can
cry in pain.
I think so.
Okay, good. That sounds interesting.
I yell at them to go on the ground and they cry.
Right. This is getting dark. Let's move on.
I mean, that's how you stop a hostage situation, if I remember anything from Speed. You shoot the guy in the leg or in the knee.
Well, the reason why you have the hostages is because if you don't have any hostages, either if you've unfortunately shot them all or if the police have rescued them, they just send, like, SWAT team after you and basically, like, the super tough, hardcore guys.
Right.
Like, police force.
Right.
So that's why you want to save hostages, and also because they're, you know, not trying.
So here's my spinoff on that. So if you get to that point, you could blow up the entire store, and then you play as the detective to try to figure out what happened. So you like switch roles. You will die as your main character, and now you're the detective trying to pick up the pieces and see who was involved in this. And then it goes on a completely other tangent.
But it only works if like people are sneaky about it. If it's just like a shoot up at the end, then that kind of falls apart, right?
Maybe, but I mean, if you like that kind of game, why not just play Viscera Cleanup Detail on Steam?
What's Viscera Cleanup Detail?
That is such a crazy game.
That's the game where you are the janitor after like alien force has just been like destroyed by a Marine Corps running through a space level, and you have to just clean up all the blood, gore, and bodies.
At least you're not cleaning up a Duke Nukem level. I mean, that would probably get pretty nasty after a while.
That would get pretty nasty.
So would it be like a bad thing if that game turns out to be a survival horror? Like there's still an alien in the ship. And you have to clean up. Or do you think it's better if they just played it straight and you just clean for the whole game?
I would never be able to play a game even if I knew it was going to be straight because I'm just scared of just like, what if there's something and it's just a hidden game? That's why like a game like Myst scares the fuck out of me even though it's guaranteed there's nothing going to come out.
Well, what about a game like Receiver?
So
tell me
what
about Receiver.
So Receiver is where you play as a gun or a dude with a gun? I don't...
You are the last dude left who's not been, like, put to sleep or something or killed.
Oh, I saw you playing that on... Oh, that's the game you were playing streaming, right?
Yeah, I streamed a little bit on my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Thurbleton. And it's fun in that you get, like, if you really get into the game, you get a feeling of tension and just, like, having to be... sneaky, and you can't run out guns blazing.
Right.
Because what Receiver is it's a game that was made out of a game jam, I think like a 24-hour game jam. I can't remember the name. Mm-hmm. But you have to treat your gun in a nearly realistic sense in that the gun can jam. There are several steps when it comes to reloading it, and ammo is very scarce, and you have to manually reload these things.
It's kind of like... like, you have to hit, like, a series of buttons to reload
your
gun.
Yeah, the easiest one, I think there's only two, but the easier of the two was the revolver, in that it's a, you know, Clint Eastwood six-shooter. You right. press a button to pop the six-chamber thing out of the alignment, another button to aim the gun up so that all the casings fall out, in which some of the casings can get stuck, so you have to press the button multiple times. Manually load each one in, and then you put the six shooting chamber back in alignment.
Right.
And that's it.
Man, that's cool. And then you just have those six shots and you're done. There's no like random extra bullshit.
There's no message saying how many shots you're on. So you have to keep a mental note of how many shots you have left.
Right. Oh, can you see them on the revolver?
Well, you can, but like when you shoot when you pull the trigger, the casing's still there. So you check back and you still have like, oh, there's six there.
There's six there, but you're like you can't really tell.
You don't know how many of them still have round, like still are active.
Man.
If you accidentally drop a active round, you can pick it up. So that's nice. But the thing is, like, there's turrets and there's these like flying turrets that will like taser you and whatnot. That are scattered around the level that you have to try and get past either by defeating them, disabling them, or just sneaking around them to collect these tapes that tell you the story of why you're the last person on Earth and you have to pick up guns.
Right. That's cool.
So like the story is kind of lame because it's not meant to be a story. It was just meant as a game jam. And like they said, hey, we can clean up and make it a real game, make a few bucks.
How much is it?
And it's maybe five.
Right. I love the idea.
It's definitely under $10.
I love the way it looks because it just the fact that they animated like putting the gun up and having your stuff fall out and having to shake it because you pulled up multiple times so more of the casings fall out and all that kind of stuff. I love those little details. I'm not sure if I'd want them appropriated into like a full sized game, but in this like small kind of environment, it's pretty cool.
It definitely seems like something that would be cool in like an ARMA mod or something like that. It would fit in that genre. I don't know if I'd want to play it all the time because like the revolver was the one I understood because it was like a three-step. The Glock, the other gun, I never could get the hang of that. I kept like pressing the button and like dropping the casing and then going around a corner like, wait, why don't I only have one shot?
Well, oh, Squiddle, you're the gun expert here. How do you reload an automatic pistol?
Well, you hit the button that drops the clip out. You grab the clip off either in your pocket or wherever it is, and you put it in. And then if it's – then you pull back on the slide, and you're good to go.
But what if you only have one clip and several rounds?
Then you got to put the gun down and reload the clip and then put the clip in the gun. Or you could be all crazy about it and – pull the slide back, drop one round in, you know, put the slide forward, and then now you got one bullet against an army.
I believe you could do that, or at least whenever you shot the gun, there was a chance the casing would get stuck in the slide.
This is why you have multiple guns. Nobody goes to a gunfight with one goddamn sidearm, right?
Well, police
do. Bullshit to think that.
Police do.
They shouldn't. It's a bad idea. Bad
not in Texas.
Man, I'm just in Texas police have bandoliers of guns. Just multiple
you gotta have a bat gun, you gotta have a hip gun, you gotta have an ankle gun, you gotta have that gun on your wrist that you thrust out your arm and then you grab it at the last second and then fire that one little nine millimeter fucking bullet casing. So there you go. That's how you do it. And then swords. You just have swords on your back.
Not just in case.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You samurai.
So that was cool. Would you recommend it? Would you say, should people buy Receiver?
Yeah, I'd say definitely just like add it to the wish list next time it comes on sale. It's like, I want to say it's like $250 when it's on sale, if that. Let me look this up. But yeah, it's definitely cool if you're a fan of first-person shooters and it's not just pressing R. Like there is like a reality to it and there is a tenseness to it. It's not going to teach you how to be like a trained killer or anything. It's just meant like
you are still pressing buttons on a keyboard.
Yeah,
it seems like
that's where Oculus Rift and a gaming glove comes in hand later.
Oh god,
you can actually reload a gun in real time, and then you know you really get into.
I'm going to buy an Oculus Rift for this computer that can't use it. So.
It is normally $5, $4.99 US dollars. I don't know the British version.
So recommend
so sale on that would be a dollar, I guess.
If it probably,
I'd say $250, maybe like $1.25 if it's 75% off.
Yeah,
just
buy it at that price.
Add it to the wish list. It'll probably go on sale one of these days, or it'll be on a Humble Bundle.
So just to make sure, like the story isn't worth shit, but the gameplay is kind of cool. part.
Yeah. It's worth like playing 30 minutes of and right. just being like, holy crap, this is kind of weird in a cool way.
That's awesome. All right, Therbs. This is the game I'm actually really interested in. So you finished Shelter.
Yeah, I marathoned it straight through it. No, actually, it was a two-parter.
Okay. Wait, is that game finished or was it green light like...
It's there's an ending to it.
Oh, cool. All right. Tell the people, what is Shelter and is it cool?
Shelter is a game by like two or three of European people. I don't know what country they're from. Sorry. They're people from Europa Universalis. But it is a game in which you are a mama badger and you have five baby badgers that you just have to take care of in the forest and go.
And yeah, that's it. It's just like go.
Yeah, it's like it's you have to look for food for them. You have to try and protect them from animals like eagles and animals of the night. And there's like four or five levels. I don't want to go like say it is like a short game, but in a Portal 1 sense, in that like it felt like it didn't feel too short. It felt like a decent amount of time, and really, I was having a tough time coming up with ideas of what else they could do in the game that wouldn't be too cheesy.
How much was it, and how long was it?
It was for me. I think I played it for like 6 hours.
Right. Okay, that's actually pretty long then.
Oh, sorry, 3 hours played.
Okay, half all right, there we go. Now that's there we have.
Yeah,
all right,
you know. Yeah,
some of that. And how much was it?
Around that time. I got it on sale because they had a Greenlight sale that we talked about, I think, last episode. But normally, as Steam loads, it is a total of $9.99.
Okay, that's not too bad.
US dollars.
All right. $10, again, 3 hours. Short.
And the gameplay was fun. There was a point where I lost one of my baby badgers, and my initial thought was like, I'll just reset the save. I want to get all five or something. But then I was like, you know what? No, I screwed up. I lost them. Just keep going forward.
That's kind of the catch, right? So Shelter, like it's a beautiful, I'd say it's a beautiful game. It's a very interesting, like painterly kind of art style.
Yeah. Like the other thing I liked was the way they portrayed this forest. Cause it's not like a cartoony way. It's not a realistic way.
Right.
It's just this weird artistic way that I think will make it, it is a, like indie method of portraying a world that will last. Like 20 years from now, this game will probably still be cool.
Like, even if you think about like what it looks like, think of a collage, but not like a collage where you use like the real items, so you don't actually put leaves on it. It's like a collage where you're using strips of paper. So like think of like multiple like strips of paper overlapping one another, and that's forming like the general look of things. But it's still a 3D world. So they somehow like translated that onto 3D space, and it has a very
distinct
look.
Like they had a very basic polygon design when it comes to like a tree and like a like leaf or the floor even,
right?
And then had a decent sized like polygon decal, like an art decal that they just tiled over everything,
right?
But they add like grass and whatnot.
Yeah, and even though like things are low poly, because there's no circles in that game, for example, that I know of.
Yeah, there's no circles. It's not low poly, but it's just like it's a tiled quilted world.
Yeah, and so like that's like the one element of it. So kind of like this beautiful game, a very like adorable premise of your badger and your
yeah.
Kids.
Like I'm not sure if anyone listening like it's I'm not this this is in no way bad. It is neat.
Yeah.
It's not super high res, but again, it's a two-guy team, I think.
Oh, no, it looks stunning.
No Europa Universalis.
I think it looks stunning. Let's just be clear here. I think it's a beautiful-looking game. But the cool thing is it's balancing all that, like the adorable premise and the beautiful art style with like a dark, like really dark, like undertone. Because I assume like by the end of the game, at least half your kids are dead. And it's just like, it's one of those things where it's like,
40% of my kids had died.
He's like
one of which because of sort of like game design, like, well, he was the runt of the five, so I guess
he was. Wait, are you saying he was the Wilbur in your story?
Sure. just because like he couldn't keep up and like shit was coming to get him.
Did you put him down yourself?
No. Okay. There's a part where you have to go up a river while a monsoon is pretty much happening. And so you have to time like going between this rock cover while these waves are coming. And so I was like, all right, everyone quick, get to the next rock. And it's like, 1, 2, 3, 4. Wait, shit. What was that noise? No, damn it.
That's kind of the thing, right? Because it's like this cold kind of like Animal Kingdom-esque of total survival of the fittest or like balance against your ability to take care of your kids. But it's like, there's no like cutscene or anything like that. Your kid's just gone. Like if there was Patrick was showing it in a quick look solo, I think it was, and there was an eagle flying overhead, and you have to like kind of guide your kids through this underbrush to hide them from the eagle, and the eagle shadow went overhead and he mistimed it and he thought he was able to go across, so he runs across like the intervening space and he looks around and one of his kids is just gone, and it's that kind of game where it's like you have to feed your kids, so you build this emotional attachment to your kids. At least that's how I understand it, to some extent. Maybe you didn't double do it, yeah. But some people do.
No, you had to constantly feed them, and yeah. each baby badger is like has a unique arc decal on. Like one is like a line that's a change in fur, one is a circle, and so you can tell like okay, there's five different unique ones. And the other thing is, once that eagle has its food, it's not like doing multiple boss run like passes on you or like a boss. It's like it's got its food, it's out.
Yeah, it's very like it's cold.
You just lost your kid.
Yeah,
it's, there's nothing you can do about it.
It's Animal Kingdom esque, and it's like really exactly noob. It's like this is life in the Animal Kingdom. It's very like stark.
To be fair, like a 40% death rate is probably pretty good.
Well, and then what I was gonna say is like I said, the ending is pretty definite and scripted, right. Sort of way. I'm not gonna say how it ends because you need to play it, but you should also wait till after the credits.
Nice. And is there like, because like it starts with you in like a cave, right? Or something like that. Is there like a direction to, or like reasoning why you're progressing, or reason for the game? Or is it just like you end up doing it because that's the objective they've set out for you?
I'm guessing just that's the objectives. I'm sure that it's right. Like you are, badgers are not a, I think they're a roaming thing. I don't know.
Okay, sure.
There's one level in which you're definitely going to the end of the level because the start of it is on fire.
Man.
Like you're straight up going through a forest fire and then like an eagle attacks and like really piss off.
Whoa.
I have got more shit to deal with, like the forest on fire.
And that's the kind of game it is. So like, did you find yourself, so how did you really like the experience, or do you think
yeah,
it worked for you? Okay, cool.
It worked for me. I had a great time with it. When if I get in the Steam beta for Steam Family Sharing, I'll let you in on it. I guess.
Yeah,
I might
try that out. But that
sample
sounds...
it. And as soon as you start playing, I'll play another game and cut you off.
Oh no! Oh man, that sounds it looks really cool, and I'm happy you played it. Would you recommend? Big recommend from you?
Oh, definitely more awesome. So than Receiver. This is like it. I'd like to think anybody would enjoy this game.
Mm-hmm.
It's. This is one of those games that you will enjoy, but at the same time, you could probably show to your family.
Yeah.
Like, you could have your parents play it.
Yeah. And there's no voice acting or nothing like that. It's just, no. Like, straight up.
Is it violent?
Very.
I mean, like, you're a badger, so you're an omnivore. You eat both plant stuff, and you can have a chance to, like, catch field mice.
No, I mean, like, it's very bloody. Can you get, like, hit by a car and then become roadkill?
Okay. There's no cars. You're in the forest.
Right.
I was just thinking the last time I had my parents see any game that I played was Midtown Madness.
Oh god, that game was fucking amazing.
Yeah. And I told them, I said,
you can never run people over because they just jump on the side of the wall.
Well, sure. And my exact comment to them was, and I think I was 16, maybe 15 at the time, I said, this is what I'm learning how to drive on.
Nice.
And they just kind of walked out of the room with them.
Oh god. Like, I swear, the most times I feel like video games are affecting my like daily life is when I'm driving a car and I'm like, yeah, I've done that in GTA. I can power slide and no, stop
oh,
it.
Oh god.
No.
I did that one time. I pulled off like an epic tail
oh, my
swipe,
god.
Almost hit the guardrail, and then come out and I actually stepped out of the car and all the traffic was stopped. Like they stopped to not hit me. And I was looking at them and I'm like, I'm just gonna get back in the car and drive off.
Oh my
god. Okay.
why did you do it? Was it rainy, or did you just like want to do it because it was fun, or were you drunk? Because that sounds like a dumb thing.
No, it wasn't a drunk thing. I completely do not condone drinking and driving. Right. But I was going to work one morning and it was rainy, and this car was pissing me off because he was going 50 miles an hour on the highway. And I was in a 94 Corvette that I have. And back then they didn't have anything that was like traction control. It just kicked your foot off the gas whenever you were like slipping out of control a little bit.
Right.
So I turned that off for some reason in what I was doing. And I was so mad at him, and I was like, oh, I can get over. And I accelerated, and I did that, and I ended up spinning out in front of him. And I looked in the rearview mirror, and I saw the guardrail just like passing by the rearview mirror, all slow motion like, then ended up like just like right crossing both lanes on the highway with the car. And I just like, oh crap, what happened?
Geez.
And everyone was just stopped. So happy. So that was my epic game.
That could have gone really bad, man. That could have gone all the way.
Yes.
And before we get to you, Noobarama, you were so sadly cut off by PC problems.
Yes, unfortunately. I'm starting to think it was one of you who cut me off, but I will reserve.
I wish I had. No, I don't. I had a question for you about Europa. Speaking about macro and micro, but I couldn't be bothered going into it again. What else have you been playing, Noobarama?
Well, I answered your question.
Did you
cut me off? So yeah.
Did you answer my question? What was your answer? And you know what? What was your answer? Let's do this.
Okay, what was your question?
What else have you been playing, Noobarama?
I've attempted to stream the horrible game SCP
Containment Breach. So what is SCP Containment Breach?
SCP Containment Breach is a randomly generating horror game.
And
I thought you didn't like horror games.
He doesn't. Why did you play this?
Like horror games.
This was a bad idea. I could have told you.
Into streaming the game, and this is the game where I scream while watching other people play. So you could sort of assume how it went down for me. Except apparently I was lucky, and I only had like 3 encounters, maybe less. And I attempted to run away. and it was easily one of the most terrifying experiences of my life. And it was bright outside, the lights were on, and I was pumping out Japanese anime music that's super happy. And I was screaming. Like, there's...
Oh, were you naked at the same time? Like, was this like one of those things that...
No, I was not naked, no, unfortunately. If I was naked, then I would have gotten shit all over my chair. But luckily I had pants on. And yeah, fuck that game. That's all I will say about it.
It didn't even look like scary. Like, you linked me to a video of SCP Containment Breach, which I just like saying because it's such a long and random name. And I didn't find it just looked like this low res, like, it looked like.
It is super low. There's no good graphics. Like, if you, like, some of the models for, like, the monsters that move quickly and stuff like that, essentially, they're horrible sprites.
Yeah.
It is. Somehow the scariest game or scariest thing I've ever experienced in my life.
But you,
I can't explain it.
This is not coming from a person who's like beaten amnesia or anything. This is from Noobarama who doesn't play scary games.
This is coming from a person who gets scared playing Diablo 2. So
okay.
it's not a legitimate opinion, but as someone who gets scared easily, if it was a lot more intense, my random seed, I might have broken down in tears. I was pretty close.
Cynic.
Yes.
Should we inform Noobarama for what awaits him in October?
Halloween?
Up to you.
I think it's a good time. Well, I mean, listeners who may know, we have Cynic and Noob, and for one episode, me, Thurlton, were on, like, did a let's play of what was that crappy? Had a full boyfriend.
Not crappy, you shit. I made some real life relationships.
We 100% entertainment. We 100%ed that game.
How many hours? It was like...
like 5 or 6 or something like that. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, my.
It wasn't that much.
Wow. So, something that I pitched to Cynic, and he seemed on board with it, and just thought, yeah, let's drag Noobarama in as well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be playing different levels of Nightmare House 2.
Yay!
Oh, God, that game. Well, actually, that game isn't as bad as SCP, so, like, For some reason, I can handle Source Engine games, because as soon as I enter a Source Engine game, it's like, oh, it's a Source Engine mod. Nothing to be scared of. And it's just, I treat it like Zombie Panic Source or something.
This will be fun, cool. Then.
This will be fun.
Well, I say that, but I'm probably going to shit my pants, so there you have it.
Well, yeah, we'll definitely see how it goes. I mean, I'm in.
So yeah, that's just a little teaser. You can look up, I know GameSpot, their horror channel stream thing, did a little play of it. It's a fun game.
Yay.
For, like, scaring you, I guess, and shooting
and
stuff.
That's a free mod for HL2, right?
Yeah, you have to have Half-Life 2, and then it's a free mod you can get.
Yeah, but SCP Containment Breach, is that a mod as well, or was that?
That's a free-to-play game. That's an open-source game. I suggest you check it out. One thing is, when you first meet the first monster, I forget what its name is, don't look away and don't blink, because he will teleport.
You're not supposed to tell them how to get through horror game bosses.
No, you because you'll never even start the game if you don't do the intro.
Okay.
And it might look like a big teddy bear. It isn't. It will fuck you up, and it is one of the scariest things ever. Never blink. Like, it can open doors, so closing doors isn't going to help. The only way to really get away is just sprint backwards while looking at it. And you can't really get away then. But I haven't encountered some of the more scary ones, so apparently I haven't really even experienced the game yet, and I'm probably never going back until sometime tomorrow.
Anything else, Noob? Have you been reading anything? Because I've been reading a bunch of stuff.
I've read books about... So I finished a book called The Bloodlands, Europe Between Hitler and Stalin. That's
you are
a really
the most boring person
book.
I've...
No, ever. It is...
For the record, still working on the book from last year.
Nice.
Actively working on it, though. I can get through like a couple pages and then put it down again.
Man.
Well, yeah, the book is, it's sort of like, most people seem to think the Holocaust are concentration camps, but about maybe 10 or 9 or 8 in 10 of people never saw a concentration camp before they died, and it's just sort of interesting information.
Aren't they technically re-concentration camps is what the idea originally started as?
What do you mean?
I'm sorry, I'm just going
let's not go further into anything else. That was one book. Anything else?
I'm currently reading a book called The Revenge of Geography. It's sort of a Star Wars knockoff, but a geography is a shitty name for an organization.
What? You're reading sci-fi?
No, that was a joke. It's a book about the effect of geography and geopolitics and why it's important. So there you have it.
Squiddle!
Hi!
Save me from Noobarama's bullshit. What have you been doing?
I've been watching a lot of YouTube of Hatsune Miku and...
oh, God.
No, not really. But yes, really. And sort
it's kind of really.
Have you been watching like Miku Miku Dance?
No, just really one song over and over again.
You have to say what it is now.
Yeah, I gotta look it up again. I can't remember what it is.
I'm Googling. Right, it's Miku Miku Dance. What is that?
I just want to say why you guys.
MMP is like an open source program where you model Miku into sex poses.
Oh, it was the Levana Polka. So that was the one I pretty quick look at. I kind of got obsessed.
Yeah, it's a Nordic song that actually it's kind of good, I guess. I don't know. So it's catchy. But what I will say is it's kind of weird that it seems like the furthest anyone has gone in development of holographic technology has been the Japanese with Hatsune Miku. Like live shows and shit.
Well, you know, Oculus Rift is going to change all that.
So we were exchanging Hatsune Miku links before the show for whatever reason. And my main thing with her is that I'm not mad that she's like this fake semi-otaku sex idol, semi-like performing artist in Japan. I'm mad because she's low res, like low poly, and just visually uninteresting. She just looks like a random 3D animated like chick. It could be like in any Japanese game ever. And I have no idea how this one took off and none of those did. And it just makes me mad.
Guess why you assume that she looks like a random 3D animatrix. Because all random 3D animatrix are based off of her.
I mean, she looks like something I used to draw back in high school because I thought it was cool to trace and copy anime characters on, you know, graphing paper. So
wait, it's not cool? Noob, you're fucked.
Wait, what? Don't listen to him. Don't listen to him, Cynic.
I'm gonna go bust up my Dragon Ball, you know, Rayon T-shirt that I had back in high school. We'll take this on.
Nice.
I'm a closet anime fan, so it's fine with me.
Nice.
But I haven't been doing much.
Yeah, you've been away for weeks, and you came back and you told me what you've been playing, and I was thoroughly disappointed with you, sir.
Yeah, life has definitely strung me in the non-social arena at this point.
Wait, did you enjoy that Little Sister video?
I did. I really did enjoy
that. No, we're not going to talk about that on this podcast. No.
I mean, just those noises.
How was Deus Ex on the ICUM iPhone? I cannot believe.
I picked it back up the other day. And because I got this message, which the iPhone decided to tell you, saying, your relentless fight against the tyrants is outstanding. Come and claim your bonus credits. And I thought, sitting there, why not?
You got a push notification for an iOS game?
Let's go claim my bonus credits. And I got back into it, and I kind of walked around for a bit and said, oh, yeah, that's why I stopped playing it. Because it got to the point where it was fun to control. It was a novelty at first. And then it was like, okay, I need a controller. I really do. So it's a good game. So far it's still good. I just wish the story is good. I wish the gameplay was better so that I could enjoy the story.
Right.
That's about it. But I did play, which everyone has talked about by now and probably sick of hearing about, is Saints Row 4.
And so
I'm gonna just throw my, you know, slant down on this. I enjoyed it.
Nice.
So far, so good.
Nice.
I will admit that I did use the cheat engine halfway through it.
Because like, what's the point with that game, with you using a cheat engine? Because you kind of
there's really anything. There's really not. It's just more
point to the game itself. So I feel like there's nothing, no harm.
Exactly. I mean, it just kind of feeds into my ADD, you know, mentality of, oh, I can't run just fast enough, or I can't run jump buildings high enough. I just need to max out everything at like level 1. You know, just because I'm tired of waiting. And
nice.
It's really it's stupid fun, and I love it. So that's I'm just going to leave it at that, to be honest.
So the final game you've been playing, I refused to accept to know what it was about until on the show.
Yeah, you did. And I'm, you know, I even launched it before because I remember playing it, and I think it was fun. I did something in it. So I think we're just kind of going to talk about it because I can't even comment on the game. So we're gonna leave that one out of it.
Really? Okay, but we can't talk about Starlicker?
Starlicker. Yeah, I don't remember where I heard this game about from. It was on Reddit, probably. And I pulled it up, and it kind of reminded me of a Space Invaders-style looking thing, but it didn't play like that. And then it asked me to buy stuff, and then I said no, and then I closed it. So that was – and that's where my tangent I kind of wanted to go off on is why is everything free-to-play? And everyone goes off on this. Everybody asks, you know, this always comes up when a game that was once $1.99 on a phone or on a PC becomes free to play.
Mm-hmm.
And Guild Wars did a great job in free to play, in my opinion, the best that I've ever seen, to be honest.
Okay.
But you don't, I mean, if I'm going to drop $5 on a game, why not just make it the game? Give me a story. Don't make me buy a story. That's what I feel like, and it just kind of annoys me. And so that's my little short tangent.
The microtransactions is a weird concept because I actually kind of do feel like I'm going to bring this up in a bit, but my like most looked forward to game is going to be filled with them, and that's kind of sad because I really like the days, I'm speaking as if it's the long past, even though games still do this, where games come out and they're done. They're just finished, that you put in the game and it works and you can finish it and it's fine. And also, that's it. Like, it's just the game on the disc and that's all you
ever need.
You
say games still do this, but name me a release that's done this.
The Last of Us.
Game.
The Last of Us was...
That's not PS3.
On PC, alright. Let's see. Diablo 3.
That's not a cool thing.
There's no microtransactions in that. That you can buy stuff from now. There's no microtransactions.
But there's a spend real life money.
Yeah, there is like a real store with real money.
Yeah, but that doesn't count.
That I got sucked into.
And it didn't launch with that either. Like, it launched as a pretty much complete. Sure, it was broken online for a while, but it launched on as a complete game that you were able to finish. And that was
okay. Wait, minus Diablo 3. Name more.
Oh, for fuck.
We'll keep going until you can name the ones that. Well, until you can't name anymore.
Okay, so Saints Row 4, that doesn't have any microtransactions.
Oh, are you telling me that's not going to have DLC? Are you really telling
DLC
me?
Doesn't count. DLC doesn't count.
I would not tie in DLC to microtransactions.
Yeah.
Because here's kind of where I'm going with this, is that, you know, they announced when they did the new iPhone 5S and C launch that I am thankful, I am so excited that Infinity Blade is at least finishing, because I played the shit out of that game. I absolutely love Infinity.
You know what?
And that was the only game I ever played that I said I will drop $25 on in game money because I want to keep playing. I want to get better stuff. The story drove me to the point because the story was so good.
Cannot believe you're saying this because this is exactly the game. This is the game I'm most looking forward to, aside from maybe like Phoenix Wright 5 this year. Infinity Blade 3 is coming out, and. Yeah. Have you read the books surrounding the Infinity Blade?
I started reading the first one and never really finished it. But I just bought the other one, the next one, Redemption.
You should read it. The first one is it's great. I think it ends really well as well. It ends solidly. And the second one, I cannot wait till, because they're actually by my favorite author in the world, Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah.
And for
me, I was really happy to see that they're finally bringing a conclusion, if not a continuation, which I was fine continuing. Okay, you're going to end it? Okay, cool. Give me a good ending, because the ending of the second game pissed me off so much.
It's the biggest cliffhanger.
Yes, I was so angry at it. I wanted to throw my phone across the room. I was so angry at that, and I'm glad they're at least making a ending to that. And like, I want to recap that. That is the only game I've ever played where I had not mind throwing money into it.
Yeah.
Because it worked. It functioned. I didn't have to. There was no reason why I had to at all. Yeah. But I was like, you know what? I want that really cool shield. I'm going to buy it.
And see, I'm the flip side. I bought the game and never put another cent into it. And I enjoyed my experience from start to finish. I was able to beat that game on normal difficulty. Yeah. I think there's new game pluses, but normal difficulty.
I can think of one other game that you were happy to put money into, Squiddle. Sure.
Okay, wait. Maybe. Okay, I'm sorry. Which one is that?
John T. Drake Flight Tracker.
Nice. Oh.
God damn it. I did try that on the endless mode, and I think after an hour in, I had to charge the phone.
I cannot believe you played that for an hour.
I was watching TV. I wasn't really doing anything, and I don't like just watching one. I like doing multitasking. So I
cannot know. What is the John T. Drake? Who is this John T. Drake?
So John T. Drake is the biggest character out there in the world. Probably the most accentuated, the most flamboyant,
certainly the loudest.
Yeah.
The most fuck you person in the world.
He's also very generous. Like, he's known for giving away like $2 points cards for Microsoft Store. Like, he's.
Yeah, I mean, but in reality, he doesn't give a fuck about you. He wants you to buy his shit. So that's John T. Drake there in a nutshell from what I've noticed. And I got to the point where, you know, you could buy John T. Drake a Diet Coke. So I did. And I feel bad for it.
Weird cult of personality shit. I mean, come on.
Oh, you piece of shit. Squiddle, you're funding his horrible addiction.
I am. So it's.
Oh, don't you see? He's making it so that guy dies of. Freaking like kidney cancer, like kidney failure. Like one day soon.
How much was it to buy John T. Drake a Diet Coke?
I don't remember. It has been. I don't want to go into it anymore. Dollar. Yeah, I don't know. No, cool. No comment.
Anything else, Squiddle, before we move on to me?
That's it for me, to be honest. I wish I could give you more. Hopefully in the future, I will be more. I will give you more topics next time.
Nice. All right. We're going to play this choose your own adventure style like we have in the past, because I've been doing a bunch of stuff. All right. You have the choices. XCOM, Enemy Unknown, Puppeteer, Dear Esther, Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, and The Promise of Blood.
Throw baby.
Dear Esther.
Dear Esther. All right. So.
Turn left. Walk west.
Darbleton, I think it was and Shinboy right? who got me onto the Dear Esther tip. Because I thought it was like this like random game that came out a bunch of years ago that turned out to be... I thought it was just like a like shitty 2D like indie game that no one played. It might have been at some point. But okay, then it was taken over.
Here's what Dear Esther is. Off as a mod for Half-Life 2 using the Source Engine.
Right.
And it was just a very well-done mod by a couple of guys who... basically telling this story and a really good British voice.
They also developed, what is it called? Machine for Pigs.
Yeah, I was going to say. The game. Yeah, it's starting at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then go into present day.
Mm-hmm.
They also made the mod Korsakova, which is also scary. The only Half-Life 2 mod that's scary. Just saying. Yeah.
So far. But no, it's what they ended up, I'm assuming it's these same guys, became their own company called The Chinese Room and remade the mod into an actual game that is the exact same gameplay of just walking around and experiencing the story as it develops or as you walk into the scripted area to make it start talking again.
Yeah. Yep.
And made it look amazing.
Staggeringly like graphically good.
Graphically staggeringly impressive.
So I'm back in the PC
and then,
gaming.
And then later, like, Frictional Games is like, hey, you want to make a spooky game called Machine for Pigs? We'll write all the awesome text for it, and you try and make it scary.
Exactly. Like, because I'm back on PC gaming to some extent, because I can run almost every game now at max, right? So I wanted to look at games that would interest me, and I'm a person who prefers story in video games. But I also wanted to... I didn't have much money, because I just bought a graphics card, etc. So I wanted something cheap. And these guys have brought up... Dear Esther before, and Total Biscuit, for example, is known for absolutely hating that game.
Did you know Total Biscuit is also a hack?
Maybe. And many other people, like, it's a very divisive game because, and I would agree with this, I don't think, unlike Gone Home, I don't think Dear Esther is a game. I think it's just an experience, a interactive experience you move through.
I will agree with the Idle Thumbs guys, or I will yield, like, they seem to find a good middle ground for it in that the games like Gone Home and Dear Esther, just settle it, they are games. People, like, well, anybody who claims it's a game, for them it is.
All right.
And we should call it the genre of walkthrough, because that's what you freaking do.
Nice.
You walk through the game.
Yeah, and that's, well, we could argue it, but there's no reason to. But the
point all you do with that game is walk.
I know, but I don't think Gone Home's the same. I think Gone Home's an actual game where you discover and you uncover and you solve puzzles, etc. But whatever. No point.
And can solve in 2 minutes.
Yeah, sure, but still. In this, you don't even do that. In this, Dear Esther is a game where you're a man on an island, and that's how it starts.
And there is no lighthouse.
There's
a lighthouse. There's a man, an island, and a lighthouse.
Well, no, there's a man, an island, and a communications tower. A red light in the distance to walk towards. But it's the general idea is, and this is on the Steam, the equivalent of a box cover, the Steam description is, you died in a car accident and you're kind of dealing with your death. That's the kind of the idea behind Dear Esther. All of that made me not want to play the game. I was like, I know it's supposedly all right, but some people really hate it and I don't know if it's worth the $10 or whatever.
The reason why I liked those games, it's not like you know the ending and you still like it. It's a game that you still want to play only to experience the story, like Romeo and Juliet,
right?
As cheesy as that is, the story of how it goes through and the way it's like given to you, both with amazing visuals and really good story. I don't know who that British voice actor is, but he's really good.
And that's the kind of thing, right? Because I didn't know that side of it. I only know like the negatives and like the idea of what it was before I bought it. And the reason I ended up buying it was actually because of Amnesia Machine for Pigs. These guys worked on that. And the Chinese Room is also working on a PS4 exclusive called Everyone's Gone to the Rapture. And for some reason, even though I didn't find that trailer particularly interesting, all of the gaming press, or many of the gaming press, were really excited by the idea of these guys working on a next-gen experience. And I was like, why does anyone give a shit? about this random small company called the Chinese Room, which is an odd name, though kind of evocative. So I bought Dear Esther, and I popped it in. And the first thing is, okay, PC gaming, you guys. And I had to play around with things like VSync settings, and it was stuttering.
Sliders,
and it was just like, why is it this complex to play a motherfucking video game when I actually spent, no shitting you, 45 minutes figuring out the best way to solve the stuttering issue I was having, and the game itself is only an hour and a half long. So it's like, I spent half as much time as the game itself just fixing the settings for the game, and I don't know. I understand that the game looked absolutely incredible when I was finished changing the settings and getting it right, but I'm not sure if PC gaming is all the way for me. That aside, the game itself, as you said, it's the game can be derived to Thurbleton walking to a point, triggering a voice sample, and then walking to the next point. And that's a negative. But the positive side of that is those voice samples are... That voice actor, he has to be like theatrically trained. He was...
By the way, that is the same voice actor from the mod. The same, same sound files, I think.
Man, like he... I've said before that it's kind of like a cop-out because it's really easy to do a soliloquy in any form of context because all it requires is for the one person and the writing to be excellent. You don't have to you don't have to play between two characters. You don't have to do any of the more difficult stuff in theater. And especially he doesn't have to act it out. He doesn't have to like have a physical performance as well. All he has to do is focus on doing an excellent vocal performance. But that aside, he is as good as, if not better than, almost anyone I've heard from like a theater standpoint. I've audiobooks and so on and so forth, people who work on those, even the actress from Gone Home. He probably delivered the single best vocal performance I've heard in a video game. And it was incredible. Like, it helped that the writing, and this transferred to Machine for Pigs, the writing, Patrick describes it as it drips. It's got such like a weight and depth to it. And it's very like, it's verbose, I would agree. And in some cases it hides behind that. It's a lot of the times it's saying nothing, but making nothing sound really nice. And that's all it's doing. But as you go on and you uncover the plot of Dear Esther and like what they're actually trying to vocalize and how they're trying to vocalize it. And you get into it a bit more and it helps that the game gets prettier as it goes on. It definitely all ties into like a really, really nice whole. And I could have gone either way with this, but I'm definitely on the side of, I think Dear Esther is a really wonderful experience that is not for everyone, but for people who like things like Gone Home, you should try it out. Like it was stunning, and that we haven't even gone into like how pretty this game can be, because like you guys have all played Skyrim, right? Noobarama, you've done whatever you do with Skyrim. Squiddle, you've played Skyrim, right?
What are you implying?
Squiddle here? No, he's BRB. But yeah, no, so the idea is in Skyrim, you're exploring the world, and there's moments where you enter, like there's a cave in Skyrim where it's in an entirely encapsulated little like forest, and the forest has like this beautiful kind of like hill in it, and you walk up the hill and you're battling people along the way, and there's like a little mini plot happening, but the environment itself is stunningly beautiful. You have a cave sequence, you have the light shafts, you have all of that. This game kind of invokes that but tops it at the same time.
It does that same thing but no fighting, because you'd have to make a whole engine that two guys couldn't really do.
Yep.
And then imagine that same thing in Skyrim, but super HD.
Yeah,
like Blu-ray-esque.
Like it was
like any huge screenshot from this game could probably be used as a desktop background for awesomeness.
Absolutely. Like outside, especially when you get outside, like near the end and it's nighttime, it's staggeringly beautiful.
I actually had everything. The game, but like game stuff from as my background before the game came out while I was following it.
What, Dear Esther?
It's actually really nice. Yeah, Dear Esther. Yes. Like some of the scenery.
Yeah, we're not just like, you know, fucking around. It was staggeringly beautiful at points. And it's even more beautiful because it's a fully explorable environment. If the Skyrim guys hired these guys for the next Elder Scrolls game, I would be appreciative of that, even though they can't because these guys are their own company now. But they put so much love and craft into some of the areas in that game that I was astonished. And the lighting engine, though simplistic in some cases, really lent itself to that.
Yeah. It's not even just like the environment was pretty. The story was very nice.
Yeah.
Very well written.
Yeah, I said, the story is, it's, you know how it's going to end. Like, it's the guy who's already died.
Right.
But it's going along the way, and the way they explain the story to you, like, mm-hmm. you could probably say the plot in like the course of a sentence.
Yeah.
But he's like Shakespearean-ly. Yeah. Does it so much better.
Yes. But yeah, his performance is half of that game. The graphics are the other half of that game. And as a whole, I think it's very playable and eminently playable. All right.
It was on the Humble Indie Bundle a couple bundles back. I'm not sure if it'll show up again.
Hmm. $10, 1.5 hours. It's arguable whether that's worth it.
Like, if you're really...
Another thing to get this Christmas on the Steam sale.
Indeed. Noob, what were you saying?
By the way, there's the lighthouse at the start.
If you're really cheap about it, you can just get the Half-Life 2 mod.
Yeah.
It's ugly,
yeah.
But it's
free.
Game.
It's free on Half-Life 2. The soundtrack, which is another really good thing.
It's all right.
I'd say it was doubled from the mod to the original in terms of length.
Cool.
It's not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. We'll move on.
The girl who does a good job. Yeah.
So it's not bad, but I don't think it's particularly amazing either.
What do you think of XCOM's stuff?
All right, like, so XCOM, Enemy Unknown. I talked about it a couple weeks ago. The only thing I have to add is...
Enemy Within?
Not Enemy Within, thankfully.
The Enemy Within is unknown?
In that it's the exact same campaign, and some people are arguing if that's, you know, a cool thing, expansion or not.
I don't think I'm going to play XCOM Enemy Within because I beat XCOM Enemy Unknown's economy. And I don't feel like beating the game now, because that is the turning point. Once you satellite the whole world, because my base is essentially a square of satellite uplinks, a square of power nodes, and everything else is the unique buildings and engineering labs. So everything costs, like, end game armor costs me like 120 gold. I get like 1,200 a month. I have like 10,000 credits just sitting there doing nothing, and I've got six of every end game armor, six of every end game weapon, and I've got a full crew of psionics, so that's two assault, two support, one heavy and one sniper, and I don't feel like beating it anymore because I've beaten it already. You are already dead, I may as well have said to that game, and then it's just like, yeah, I'm done. And of course I did play it on normal, I didn't play on a higher difficulty, but
you didn't play it on easy.
Yeah, I didn't play on easy. And normal, the way the game does difficulty is panic, specifically. Managing how you are working with other countries and which countries you want to get the bonus from, etc. And knowing...
If you can get all the countries to give you the bonus, you're good then.
Exactly. So it's kind of like done. And... I guess I may have gotten just a really good roll for my base, because I think the base itself is randomized when you start the game. But like the fact that I got a good roll, the fact I was able to cover blanket the world in satellites halfway through the plot, just kind of killed that game for me. So, and I went in it and I found the economy compelling rather than the combat, because I think, and I will maintain, even though Durin's not here, but I'll say it anyway, Valkyria Chronicles is better when it comes to the combat. I vastly prefer that way that works, because line of sight is a gigantic issue for XCOM, because there's parts where you think you'll have line of sight, but you don't. It doesn't give you good indications of if you'll move to an area, whether you'd have line of sight for the enemies you can currently see. Snipers, for example, especially when you give them Archangel armor, when they fly high enough, they have line of sight to where you'd expect them to be. But at the same time, it's odd because it doesn't really give you a good indication of what your range is on some of your weapons. Like your pistol offhand, you don't really have a good idea of how big your range is. So sometimes I've elevated myself with the expectations that I'll finish the move using the pistol, but he's slightly too far away, even though I have full line of sight to him, and so on and so forth. So there's little areas of that game which I didn't particularly find enjoyable. And the plot is just trash. Like, there's no real plot to it. There's no real, like...
I mean, like, it's a remake of a game that was 20 years old at this time, and the games back then weren't trying to be insane with the plots. They were just trying to get a game that worked.
Exactly.
I think... While I enjoyed XCOM, I might come back and finish it as well, but I definitely enjoy the Banner Saga more. And I talked to some of the developers of PAX that's coming out in November, so I can't wait for that.
I can't wait for Banner Saga's storyline to come out. I can't wait. I can't wait. Next game we'll talk about is Puppeteer. Other side for you. So who's does anyone here know what Puppeteer is? Please tell me you do.
I saw the quick look.
I remember the quick look. You play as a puppet master or puppeteer, I guess.
You just play as the puppet, a little boy without a head.
I hear that master of puppets are pulling the strings.
Oh, that's the Rammstein song, right?
Oh my god.
Get the fuck out.
Good night, folks.
That was well done. Well done, Noob. That was well executed. I hate you.
Well done, Squiddle.
So, you guys, would you agree that it looked pretty in the quick look?
I agree that it made me a little sick when I was watching. Like, I got not sick like it's nasty, but I got queasy like watching a lot of the jerkiness. But it looked great. I mean, it looked awesome.
So that's the thing, right? But because quick looks are obviously in 24 frames a second, and that game runs as a solid 30. I have to say that when I first put that in that game, I was shocked at how good it is. And it's weird because I played Dear Esther, Brothers of Tales Two Sons, and Puppeteer back to back to back. So I played three of the best looking games I've ever seen back to back to back. And it was just like, well, maybe not Brothers, but the other two definitely. And it was just like, it was stunning how good. And it was odd because I played Puppeteer before Brothers. So I was like really surprised and really like impressed by Dear Esther. And I was even more impressed by Puppeteer. In fact, the Puppeteer is probably among my three best looking games of all time. I think it's definitely up there. And in its case, both technically and stylistically speaking, because I know it runs at 30, whatever consoles, this generation, et cetera. But when Brad Shoemaker and Vinny Caravella made the point that it kind of looks like a next gen game made now, that's kind of how it looked to me when I was watching it in real life on my TV, running under my PS3, being able to control it myself. It was just staggeringly beautiful. The voice acting in that game is also very high quality. It's very theater-esque. It's very very well-trained, very well-enunciated, very well just overall directed voice acting. And I would agree that the gameplay is a bit too simple. Like, the problem with Puppeteer is it's a $50 game. It's a half-price game, at least here. It's probably $40 over there. But it's being released just before the next-gen consoles, just before GTA 5. It's got barely any marketing behind it. It's a Japanese origin game, so I bet they're not even sure whether it has a market here. And it's a simplistic platformer with a weird art style. And there is... I'm going to be surprised if they sell more than, like, 10,000 copies of it. Like, it is sad to me that the Puppeteer is going to do... probably going to do really poorly, because that game is staggeringly beautiful, has excellent production values, and if it wasn't for a really simplistic gameplay style, I would have bought it immediately. But as it stands, I played the demo. I am not much of a platformer guy, so I'll probably be part of the problem and waiting for a price drop. But yeah, that game, it was stunning in how beautiful it was. Let's see if I have any more notes on it. I don't think I do. I think that was like the...
I mean, at the very least, it's something that you might probably see on Steam, or not Steam, PS.
Yeah.
Or like the Sony subscription thing that I can't think of
PS
right
Plus.
Now.
It'll probably come free on PS Plus at some point. Like, this is my immediate reaction after finishing the game. Wow, what a wonderfully creative game. I don't know if I've ever been interested in a platformer again, but it is beautiful. That was my immediate reaction when playing it. And it was just like... Yeah, like, the quick look is indicative to some extent. I will say that, you know how Brad kept hating on the other, the female side character? The idea
That's
behind...
That's because he's a sexist.
No, it's because of her voice acting, and the point is that you're all from the moon. Like, everyone else in that game is from the moon, but she's apparently from the sun. So it's doing the thing where everyone else is pronouncing and acting as if they were the British, and she's essentially an American. So she's portraying the quintessential or British perspective of what an American is, which is they come to our country, they cannot barely speak English, and they mispronounce everything. That's kind of her, like, standpoint. So her being a valley girl is very much intentional.
Whether I don't know what you're talking about!
Oi!
So, yeah.
So cynic! What was the next game you played?
And...
Oh, my God. Sorry, guys.
No, that's fine.
Sorry, audience. No, not you, the audience.
Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons. Is it the best game of the year? Hey guys, has anyone else actually played this game? I'm surprised how few people picked this up.
I've not heard of it.
No, I've heard of it. I just haven't played it. Like, it's not an indie game that grabbed me. It's not even an indie game, actually. It's the weird thing is,
yeah,
I'm pretty sure this is a game made by the same company that made Payday 2.
Oh, I'm not sure. Is it?
It is.
I'm not sure about Payday 2, but it's a big production company. Like, it's not a small company.
No, it's a company that, like, sort of like what Iron Galaxy is. Like, Divekick was their first game that they made, and like, they weren't just a, like, they were a porting company who like picked up the slack from other game companies.
Yeah,
this company is the same way with, and like Payday and Payday 2, as well as Brothers.
Yeah,
A Tale of Sons was their, like, that was their first game of their own that they, like. Basically, they're jumping into the middle tier void that was left after Midway.
It's also made Syndicate and Chronicles of Riddick, Assault on Dark Athena.
Yeah, like I said, the first two quality games they've made, Payday 2.
I've heard Chronicles of Riddick is pretty good.
Syndicate got 5 stars on Jeff.
Oh, yeah, Jeff loves Syndicate. I will argue that this is the first game they've made that was any good to rag on Jeff. No, it's
because it's so fun to do.
I love him so much.
But again, just to folks who are listening who may have misconceptions, we are the Giant Bomb community podcast for Guild Wars 2, off topic and on topic, not like Giant Bomb staff or anything.
Not at all. We're not interns or anything like that.
But we can confirm we are the only Giant Bomb community podcast.
Oh, there's also
But if you are hiring, I will definitely buff your shoes as you walk into the office. Put a spit shine on them.
None of them listening to this. Come on.
Indeed, good sir. No, it's a hashtag bombs launched.
Alrighty, top of the morning to you, sir.
Anyway, please continue.
Yeah, instead of plugging every other podcast out there.
Are you the worst? Are you your own worst cooperative teammate in that game?
Oh, man. So... Where do I start with?
And explain why. Explain why you are cooperative teammate.
So, Brothers is A Tale of Two Sons, and it's essentially are you guys familiar with Grimm's story tales or just like European fiction in general, just like the darker kind of medieval fiction, that kind of stuff?
Right.
So this is.
I'm familiar with the painting.
Yeah, so you have a general idea. A lot of people do because it's been part of Zeitgeist for a while now. So essentially. This game is as if a game studio sat down and wanted to make a new ancient tale. Wanted to make a new story, somewhat like a cautionary tale, somewhat like a kid's story tale, very much a fairy tale, but certainly with those European sensibilities, that element of like the cold darkness, very much like Shelter in like the shortness or brevity of life, or it deals with mortality to a large extent. It's essentially a game which is trying to be a Grimm's fairy tale. And I think to a lot of...
In a really cool way, yeah.
Yeah, and to a lot of... It succeeds, in my opinion. So Brothers, in itself, is a game where... very simplistic gameplay. Incredibly simplistic gameplay. And that's actually one of my biggest gripes with it. In that you are playing the game with one brother on the left stick, one brother on the right stick, and an interact button for each. Or two interact buttons, or is it just the one? One or two, whatever. I think it's just the one. So one interact button for each, and the sticks for both of them. So essentially, it's kind of an interesting premise, because that is far more difficult to work with, at least when you're starting off, than you think it would be, because your brain is not wired very well to independently control two different things entirely with the two different sticks. And that can work against it sometimes, but I think it's actually pretty fine because, for one, it's a novelty. I found it when I first started playing the game, I definitely found it a novelty to play with both brothers and figure out what to do with my hands to make it work. And I never actually got good at it. I never actually got good at entirely independently working with both brothers. And I'd find myself instead putting one brother in a safe position and then just working with the other brother. Or, and this worked pretty well for me, if I lined it up on screen such that one brother was on the left of the screen, one brother was the right of the screen, and those would be the same as on the sticks, so the left stick brother would be on the left, right stick brother would be on the right, then I could control them identically. So I can make them remove, like, mirror their actions. So say they both had to carry something, I'd be able to do that perfectly as long as I kept them where I think they should be. And so that element is very interesting. I'd say everyone should at least consider it as a game to play just for that, because it's, you find those tricks, you find those ways to work with it, and you find, in my opinion, something that's really interesting, a limitation of the human brain, and just the exploration of that limitation, the exploration of, oh my god, I can't actually do this very well, was very interesting in itself.
It's like, you think it's like juggling, like doing two things at once, but the trick to, like, juggling isn't really doing two things at once, it's going into a pattern that is extremely tough,
yeah,
to master, but once you do, it's like, oh, it's easy.
Yeah,
you are doing two different things at the same time, and so
our
brains aren't meant to do that.
It doesn't. I've said this before on the show, maybe, but I'm the kind of guy who has to, like, turn down the radio when I'm reading a map just to concentrate. Like, I'm that kind of poor at, like, multitasking. So yeah, I breezed through this game. I had no problems with it, but I had to make those little tricks for themselves. And that was really exciting because I was working with actual limitation that had never been exploited by a game before. So that was really cool. But anyway, so let's just break down Brothers into Spare Parts. It's a fairy tale, interesting game mechanic. And why does that mean you have to play it? So the cool thing is, I think it executes on both of those wonderfully. And it also it's also really pretty. I don't think it's as pretty as Dear Esther or The Puppeteer, but if those two games hadn't come out, or if The Puppeteer hadn't come out this week, it would have been probably the prettiest game I've seen since The Last of Us. It is really pretty, like a wonderful art style, very European-esque. So if you've seen, like, European cartoons or paintings and so on, it's very, like, inspired by that kind of their version of simplistic art style. It's certainly not anime. It looks nothing like anime. It's very European.
It's not really worth playing.
Beautiful lighting, excellent water physics, ran at 60 frames a second, no problems, full screen. I did have some frame dips at some points because of, like, there's parts where there's two liquids, so say blood and water were mixing, and only at those points did my card for some reason have trouble with it. It might have been a CPU bound issue, I'm not sure. But in general, my main takeaway from Brothers: A Tale of Two Sons is that game made me tear up over a game mechanic. And I cannot say more. I cannot say why. I'd say don't go into that game trying to predict things, because ultimately it is a kid's fairy tale. It's very predictable. It starts with the two kids trying to save their father. And yeah, if you go into it with ideas or preconceptions of how it's going to play out, that may detract from it for you. But I will say that I guessed most of what that game was going to do before it did it, and it still affected me. So that is a definite positive on its part. And I wouldn't agree with Brad Shoemaker in saying that it will probably be in the top three this year. I think, like, on my personal list, it's in, like, the eight. I enjoyed, for example, Gone Home and Thomas Was Alone more, but I still think this is a very, like, I wouldn't call it important, unlike Gone Home, but it's definitely a game that people should try out. And it's only $15. It's on Steam. So yeah, Brothers, Tales of, any questions? I don't know. I would love to talk more about the game, but it's such a simple, like, little game. And, like, the only thing I really say is fucking go out and play it, because it's some people it will really connect with and you'll fucking love it for the rest of your life. And for me, maybe not, but it's definitely an eminently playable, enjoyable game. So that's it. And yeah, anything other than that, I've only been doing is I've read a book. Promise of Blood, the Powder Maid Trilogy, book one is probably the best, like, debut I've read since Brandon Sanderson's work, and I think it's excellent. Everyone should buy it, and I'll include that in the plugs. And with that,
I guess on one footnote, one correction, fact check, if you will.
Sure.
They're developed by different games, Brothers and Payday. Yeah. They're published by the same publisher.
Right. But Brothers was made by someone who was big, right? They've worked on something big before, and I've forgotten what it was.
Yeah, it's Starbreeze Studios. They did make Syndicate and Riddick Combat, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. Starbreeze. And it was excellent. Yeah. So definitely worth playing. And yeah, Promise of Blood. It was actually, like, of all the things I played or did, Promise of Blood, the Powder Maiden trilogy, that book was the thing I most enjoyed over the last 2 weeks. Like, it was fantastic, and I'll definitely include it in the show notes. And with that, what do we have time for, guys? Do we have time for a little bit of news? We only have three topics. Or do you want to just end out the show?
I think we'll leave the, you know, iPhone stuff for the, you know, Will and Norm, or Jamie and Adam's Tested podcast.
Yep.
As brief as you can, because we're mostly a PC-centered podcast.
I guess.
I guess. Tell me why I should care about the PlayStation TV thing, which is only coming out in Japan right now.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I have a theory of that.
Because they'll work all the bugs out of it, and then it'll be better when we get it here in the amazing states of America.
Yeah, that or it's compensation for the fact that the PlayStation 4 isn't coming out until next year in Japan.
Exactly. Yep. There you go. I think those are actually really linked, because they said that for the Vita TV, which is the PlayStation Vita, that you can play on your TV. And I think as soon as I saw it, both me and Shinboy were like, I'm buying that.
It's PlayStation Vita plus Apple TV for your
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. So you can play Persona 4 Golden, you can play a bunch of games that are really awesome on your TV, and you can also potentially, eventually, remote play your PS4, which is actually the reason I'm buying it. So so the remote play functionality and the PS4 DualShock 4 functionality will be patched in at a later date. And why I think that's the case is because, and the unit itself is only being considered for Japan for now. And those two are linked because the PS4 is only coming to Japan next year, February. And I think they're going to take until then to patch in the PS4 functionality and the DualShock 4 support. And only then, once they get that working, do I think they'll launch it in the States. So I think that's how that's kind of going to go down. So for now, for people importing the Vita TV, since it isn't going to be released here anytime soon, have fun. You're going to be able to play Persona 4 on your TV, and that's going to be freaking awesome. But yeah, the PS4 stuff probably will happen until later. But in the end, $99, PlayStation Vita, really awesome games, play on your TV, remote streams, the PS4 stuff, does a bunch of video streaming and music streaming. There is like no reason that I wouldn't buy it. It is a great purchase. And that's it. That's the long and short of it.
I dropped my phone in the toilet and now my USB connection doesn't work.
That's a bummer. My phone doesn't have a USB connection.
That sounds like a shitty situation, if you ask me.
Oh,
well, no, it just got covered in urine. Not
can we just end on that? I mean, like, I know Steam Family Sharing is a cool thing, but
I have to at least say something about Steam Family Sharing. Tell me about Steam Family Sharing. Goodbye.
Okay, there's two sides to this argument, or at least this discussion. People think it's really awesome that we're getting something for nothing, and that the idea, the theory of sharing your digital locker of games to other people is now a possibility with Steam Family Sharing. Basically, I can have my Steam account. If I'm not actively using it, I can let Cynic get access to it, one of, I think, 12 people.
Right.
And he can start playing any of those games, provided the developer has approved it. And then if I decided to start playing any game, he gets a 5-minute warning to either buy it or get the crap off it, because it will boot him off. So we are losing nothing is changing in terms of the current agreement. We are getting this added benefit.
Right.
People are complaining that it's if you're playing a different game on Steam, it shouldn't boot you off. If you play the same game.
Complaining.
I don't know.
They
think that would be a better idea. That's a coworker. I told him he's an idiot.
That would be a better idea. That's how because Xbox is kind of like that. You could
Xbox is kind of like that, but they also have a subscription based model in order to use that.
Right. Steam is doing this for free. It was like that. They no longer offer it. So this is like the only and first sort of like, plan.
Yeah, it's like sort of like there's this magical medicine that cures cancer, but it tastes bad, so people are complaining.
The other thing is people are saying that when Microsoft did it, everyone like was up in arms and roaring, but when Steam does it, it's the best thing ever. And a lot of people need to realize that there was the tension against Microsoft's design with mm-hmm. things like the DRM policy and that I guess not being ownership of stuff, which we still don't technically have ownership of the games now mm-hmm. on the PC market, but there is no like it's Steam's not trying to screw us over.
Well, like you have the luxury of lower prices on PC, sales on Steam. Yeah, you have a bunch of other stuff, including the fact that this family sharing isn't necessarily, it doesn't have to be limited to your family, and there's like they're really open and honest about how they're managing it, which is awesome because Microsoft wasn't very open and honest about it.
Here's in layman terms what this is. This is, as Steam has always done, tried to offer a better service than piracy, a more convenient service. Because right now, all you have to do is just let somebody, like let your friend know the Steam login password for you. And then people are already doing what this service is doing. They're just making it safe steps.
Right. Yeah.
And then also giving you a convenient option to, hey, buy this for yourself, you freeloading bum.
Yeah, exactly. And that's totally cool. And you know what? I'm firmly on the side of this is cool, and it's going to be interesting seeing if publishers, like, is it enabled by default or disabled by default? Are publishers going to opt out or aren't they? I want to see how this plays out, because it's going to be definitely going to have ramifications across the entire industry, and that's really exciting, in my opinion, because this whole thing of digital rights and being able to sell back games, like, for example, EA recently allowed you to return digital games and that kind of stuff. Shit's happening in gaming, and that is incredibly interesting. So I'm totally on the side of Steam family sharing. Seems cool.
The discussion is further evolving. It's going to be cool. It's in. It's been announced. About the time this podcast is probably going to be coming out to folks, by the time you're reading it, the beta will be started. It's just going out to the first 1,000, and then they'll keep incrementing it from there. To sign up for it, the best way I can suggest is going to the Giant Bomb page or the topic Patrick made, and then looking for the link to join the Steam group, because that's how you sign up for beta access.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I don't know. I don't like it. It's a bad idea. It's just, I don't know.
Troll.
The one problem I have with it is because I'm the sort of asshole who doesn't like lending out my stuff, and it's essentially allowing people to ask for me to lend out my Steam account and my games. And
you can say no. Like this is also for, like, Duran said he's a really big fan of this for him and his wife, who want to often play the same thing, but it's the hassle of having to relog to different accounts. This will save steps and make his life easier.
Sure, yeah. But he will not be able to play games while she does. And that's kind of where, like, the people who are saying they prefer the way Xbox proposed to do it, which was be on a single game basis. That's kind of cool.
I would like a teleporter, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get it, right? So I don't know what people are complaining about.
And there's a bigger problem.
I have a portal gun, and yeah.
Like, people used to have, like, the attach rate for the Xbox 360 is like 20 or something, right? It's pretty big, but Steam, you have people with libraries of over 200 or 300 games.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I don't like. It's bad. Like,
yeah.
Someone's going to rent out their library
for free.
I don't like that.
Exactly. I may or may not. Okay, let's get some confessions out. Mm-hmm. How many games do you have on your Steam library? Not installed, but just how many games do you have?
Only have like 210.
Does it tell you like somewhere?
If you hover over library, it tells you.
If you go to library, there's the option. Like, it should say installed or recent or favorites. You can hit that drop down and see in all games. I have 120.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, I don't mind any indie game. Oh, 222. No.
I guess I don't know how to.
In
my favorites.
Oh no! Just hover over library with your mouse and
like top left where it says search.
I have 76.
There you go. I have 35. 35 games on Steam.
You're not a PC.
No, and I'm also very selective over what I actually buy. So
I just realized when you get like 70 games, you should get a Steam meta achievement that just says PC Master Race.
Are you serious?
No, like, no, I'm saying they should do that.
Oh, damn.
After a certain number value, like, because once because you can tell for like Noob and myself and like we're the crazy PC people.
Yeah.
No, we're not. I'm much lower than my friends list average.
Well, that's the kind of thing, right? And that's
well, yeah, but there's a line that's crossed, and then you just go further down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
I'd say like the average is like 300 to 400.
You're incorrect, but okay.
Yeah, I'm going to say no, that's not correct. Probably triple digits is when you go over the line.
Yeah.
So Squiddle, you're still okay. Cynic, you are clearly not a PC person right now.
No, and I don't plan to be. As I said, I took half as much time to set up GeoWrestler as I did to play it, and that's fucked. PC gaming, man. It's got its benefits, but it's got certainly has its negatives.
Like the big benefit for consoles is that you only have to make it for one engine, one video card,
yeah,
or maybe two. Because
I don't really understand why, but it just the idea of people being able to play games for free makes me sick to the stomach. What is wrong with me? It genuinely pisses me off that people will be able to play games.
Do you guys think they'll ever release usage statistics with this?
No, because they aren't going to release like money statistics for stuff. Yeah.
But they'll obviously have it on the back end, and they'll probably show it to publishers. I'm just going to be okay if it gets to a year from now, and suddenly all of the major publishers start deactivating Steam family sharing. That will be a certain like indicator of how it's been working out for them. But I think it's got like just enough hassle to it that not many people will abuse it, and the people who will be in the minority. So.
Oh, but I have friends who have 2,000 games and they're never playing games on Steam. So they're essentially a walking library.
So, there you go. And with that, that's all the news for this week. That's all I've been playing. I've been doing some more stuff with importing consoles, etc. But I will tell you how that went when I've received my console, probably by the end of next week. And look forward to an episode of the Linking Cast, which will probably be recorded and put up maybe before this one, maybe after this one. We will see. Any plugs? Thurbleton.
Again, humblebundle.com. Check to see if there's any arcades in whatever town you live at, and go to a convention, preferably like a Comic-Con or a game convention. There's little ones that happen all around the U.S. and around the world. They're a lot of fun.
Cool. Nubarama.
Come with me to the Toronto International Film Festival and let's watch movies together.
Man, I should go to more film festivals. We have some pretty good ones over here as well. I just never go.
I know someone who's starring in a movie in the film festival.
Is she pretty? Cool.
It's a boy.
Is he pretty?
Is he pretty?
I don't know.
Squiddle.
Too old for me, to be honest, to tell.
Any plugs?
Happiness can be found in the greatest locations at the back of your mind where you will never find in the darkest corners of your consciousness.
Two in the stink, one in the pink.
And for my plug, because that was cool, I guess, until Noob ruined it. I'm gonna bring it up again because I really want to push this book because barely anyone's read it. Promise Blood, the Power Mage Trilogy, look for it in the show notes, by Brian McKellen. Single best fantasy debut I've read since Patrick Rothfuss and The Name of the Wind. And I think it is that level of good. And more people should check it out. I'll include a link to Goodreads so you can read what it's all about. It is fantasy, though. So I'm not like Noob. And if you're looking for history, this is not the place. Thanks for listening to us. That was the Scotch Cast.
What about my plugs?
You said Toronto Film Festival.
That is your plug.
I just mentioned that I should go to the Toronto Film Festival. I'm probably going to stream SCP Containment Breach, and then you can hear me stream. But
yeah, also
say my name over here.
Giant Bomb PC Gaming. What?
Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub.
I wanted to punish Noob for not mentioning it by not including it in the show notes, but now I have to. Giant Bomb PC Gaming Hub.
If you are a Giant Bomb subscription member, you probably saw the Unprofessional Friday, which happened on Thursday, where they played Gary's Mod. And we've talked about Gary's Mod in the past before.
Yes.
And the PC Gaming Hub is going to do more and more dumb stuff like that in the coming weeks.
I'm going to cancel all events that are done.
If that Gary's Mod thing didn't have the mind of Vinny and the creativity of Jeff behind it, I don't think it would have been as interesting, but it was hilarious when they put it on there. Man, I'm going to go watch the Hatsune Miku quick look thing So see you next week. Bye.